Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by 1,000 miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is a brand new episode of Gaming Uncensored. And Tommy sitting over there. What's up, man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm a little nervous.
Yeah.
Because this may be the most boring show that we have ever produced. After this show is over, we're not going to have any listeners left. Like, the four guys that we've got now, they're just going to be like, yep, we're out.
That's quite possible. And that's a low bar of boringest show that we've ever done. But yeah, we could get there for sure. So just so you know, we do have some show notes. Go by GamingUncensored.com because we're going to talk about other stuff and may not get to them at all. There is some news over there, though. Some more layoffs, not surprising, but also not fun to talk about. So if we don't end up talking about that, not the worst thing in the world. And a couple of other industry things, a couple of interesting discussions I do hope we can get into. Warner Brothers talking about how they kind of see the gaming industry right now on the heels of one hugely successful game in Harry Potter and one flop of a game in Suicide Squad, which is fascinating to see the lessons that they took from those two games. We can talk about that. And a few other kind of general industry things. Honestly, not a whole lot happening news-wise right now. And when it is, it's layoffs, and that's not stuff we want to be happening. So
no,
kind of happy to talk about some other stuff.
Well, normally this time of year when it goes dead, you really got to struggle for things to talk about. But this year I feel like it's different because we are playing more. We're playing games right now like we were when we met each other 19 years ago. And it really makes it easier to do a show. Like, holy crap, we're actually playing video games.
For sure. So, literally playing video games right now.
Hey! I gotta talk about this just for a second. Like, so at the last show, Chad Colm, what's up, buddy? And we were talking about various things, and I told him that you were playing games during the last show, and you can't even tell. And I'm like, the dude's a freaking nature, man. Like, I'm watching the video going, okay, where does he pause so that he can focus so that we can have a conversation? If you had not told me you were running that during the show,
I would not have known. Yeah.
No. That's amazing. You're like a freaking super villain or something.
Or just have ADD and can channel it in somewhat productive ways.
Yeah. So, because I kept thinking, because I knew what happened, I was like, okay, he's going to miss a step or he's going to die or, you know, something.
Yeah.
Nothing. Like, I would have never known.
Yeah. For sure. Me playing it right now is probably going to be a whole lot less interesting because I'm just like roaming around a little bit. We'll talk about that here in a little bit.
Yeah.
Can I say, Joe, just because we're on that point, because right after we finished the show last week, I finished your intermission. Like, I didn't realize I was that close. Like, that right. big boss fight at the end of intermission was what I was doing during the show, which is kind of amazing. It just that well, was so I, happened to be see, where we were at in the game, which cracks me
see,
up.
See, this right here is why I had a switch, because we should need one Spider-Man, but I was like, it can't be that long. We have to finish this before For sure. we start the new game. And we did.
We did.
We did, and now we're playing the new game, and we're not gonna have lives.
Yeah, no.
Until after Christmas,
it's like just it's gonna completely own us. But one quick issue with the end of intermission, and I'm assuming you caught this and caught up.
Yes.
The same thing that they did at the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, they did at the end of intermission, and I'm worried they're gonna probably do it at the end of Rebirth now, where they shut off your ability to stream that to protect, you know, spoilers or whatever.
Ooh, maybe I missed that.
So there's like a chunk of stuff that theoretically didn't get posted because it pops up the same little message that it did at the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, where it says streaming not available for this portion of the game or whatever.
Well, crap, now I gotta go look now you to gotta see go, what I missed.
You gotta go look it up. The good news is that's not really anything. Like, the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, super spoilery. Like, I don't get why they choose to do this, because it's dumb, because you can easily get around it. Like, you just use a capture card as opposed to streaming from PlayStation's built-in streaming. And they can't stop you from doing that. And almost all streamers do that anyway. And so what's the point? Anyway, it's just a dumb thing to me. But in intermission, it was particularly dumb to me in that there's not like a big like story thing that happens in that last part. There's a little bit, and it leads into Rebirth in a really cool way. It brings back, you know, all the characters. You get to see them there at the end, and they have a little thing and whatever. But it wasn't like the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, where you're like, oh wow, like they deviated from the original in a really specific way that is now changing everything that we think is about to happen. Like, it was massively shocking to me at the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake. And while, again, I think it was dumb that they blocked out streaming for that, again, from the PlayStation, I can at least wrap my head around the rationale of why they would, of trying to avoid spoilers out there. But the end of the intermission wasn't anything. Like, why are you doing that again? Like, it's just now that's the thing you do, and it's just annoying.
So now I'm frustrated, because the last thing I saw, which made sense for the end of that piece of software, was them leaving Midgar.
Yeah.
In a group, having a discussion about all that had happened or whatever. And then the plate goes down and Barrett says, "Smell that fresh air," and he turns around and looks, and Midgar's going up in smoke.
Yeah,
and that's the last thing I saw. So now I'm wondering what I missed.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where it cut out, because that feels like the end of it. And so maybe it didn't actually cut out. Maybe it actually kept streaming and just gave the little warning on on the screen. But it said as clear as day, you know, like, this part of gameplay cannot be streamed or whatever. You know, it's just dumb. It's just dumb, guys. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's it's 2024. Like, you're not going to avoid any kind of spoilers, especially for a game that's, you know, a year and a half old or whatever intermission was at the point where we're playing it. And maybe it didn't happen because, like, the game's old and they just actually took that functionality out and didn't note that in their, like, warning.
You can't
stream this portion of the game, but
it felt like the end. I don't know if it was or not.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and look and see just on what was broadcast to see if there was anything after that. So there may or may not be a little bit more there. But they very clearly said that it wasn't being streamed, which, again, dumb.
I think last time I got a warning.
Yeah.
It was like, this is not available. And I didn't get that this time.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Who knows? But regardless, it's a dumb thing. Don't do it.
It is. It's stupid, because you're making people who want to promote your software, you're making it hard for them.
Yes.
To do what they're trying to do. And to quote Michael Wilmon, it's marketing junk.
Yes.
That's what it is. It's marketing junk.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, and it's dumb. So all that said, very few complaints about intermission other than that, and now we are officially, like, solidly into Rebirth, and very few complaints so far with Rebirth. I have one we can talk about a little bit, and actually relates to a show note that we have, gamingcensored.com. But we could just chat about the amazingness of it so far, because I think we're both pretty enthralled. Before we do that, though, just really quickly here, thanks to the Patreon folks. Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, Luik, Logan, Liz, and Jordan. I was doing half of that off of memory from doing it so often because I was trying to scroll on the page. Thank you guys all, as always, for your support. If you would like to support us, help us buy video games that we can play, like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which you guys bought for us, which we greatly appreciate. You can do that. Go to gamingcensored.com and click that Become a Patron link there at the top of the page. And so, yeah, thank you guys for your support in so far as you bought us a game that we are now going to talk about to you, whether or not you want to hear about it. So,
so before we get into that, I just have to say that when I turned on the YouTube last night, I had what looked like about 2 hours of content, but when I got to the end of it, it was more like three. And I didn't even notice. Like, I started watching it like 7, and when I looked up, it was like 10. And that's when you know you're like into something.
Yeah.
Because I really honestly lost 3 hours last night trying to get through that for this show, and. Okay, we love the original game. It's one of our favorites of all time.
Yes.
We're going to love it till we die. And this, in our feeble little brains, was like, oh, they're remaking it. Could be cool, could be not. And it has been cool so far. But I will say part of the reason that it's cool to me, and I, this is where I want to debate with you. I believe I find it cool because it's a totally different game.
Yes.
Like, it's not what we played 14 years ago. It's not close. It may be what we dreamed that game was, but this is a whole other ball game. Like, after I watched the video, I had to come in here to my office and scroll back through it on the monitor so that I could read all the little pop-ups because they're too small on the freaking screen. And it wasn't anything that I didn't already know, like slotting materia and all of that jazz. But what they did do is they, at least it looks like, they added some mechanics in there from, like, The Witcher and Devil May Cry with, like, stances and, like, you can hit buttons and Cloud kind of switches stances and allows you to do some different things. And it's a very interesting situation because it is the game, a remake of the game that we played when we were kids. But it's not.
Right.
It's not. And you can talk about the story deviation and all that, but it's not even really about that.
Yeah.
This is like 6, 8, 10 levels above what we played when we were kids, just all the way around, package-wise. I'm not saying it's better. I'm saying it's more realized.
Yes. Yeah, that's 100% true. The stances stuff, that was actually in remake as well. Some of the, there's like the synergy things are new. They had that in intermission and they're fleshing that out more here. And so we can talk about that a little bit because that's cool. But on the whole, the big picture kind of stuff, it is the game that we love. 25 years ago, whatever it is now, 30 years ago, however old we are old. But it's not. It is more fully realized than it was then. But it's also just different. Like, we know that it is not the same game because we know the ending of Final Fantasy VII Remake kind of sets up this, like, parallel dimensions kind of thing. And so, like, the original game was already, like, trippy. And once you got out of Midgar in the original game and you started getting more of the details about, like, Zack and Cloud and like, how this weird kind of, like, shared personality thing works, like, that game got really convoluted. This has that, but it's even more so. Like, it's even a different layer. So I just went and looked. You didn't see the whole end of Intermission. Okay. There's about 4 minutes that it did cut off. Which features Zack. And so that was the part that they didn't show you when Zack comes back. So I just sent you a link to it so you can see the end of it. It'll be there for you. Which, again, isn't anything that's, like, super necessary, but it's interesting. And you know, again, stupid that they cut it off. It was 4 minutes. Like, why are you just cutting off four? Anyway, yeah, that's a different aside. But all that to say, like, that's going to tie back in the beginning of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You play as Zack, which is how the game starts, which is fascinating.
Which would have made more sense if I'd have seen that. He's like, take care of my friend, and you know,
yeah, picks up, like, right there essentially, and so you get this kind of thing, and so it, whatever, like, it's convoluted, and that's the whole point of it. Like, it's supposed to be convoluted, and that's the world that Final Fantasy VII is this weird, like, again, like, alternate reality thing that they've leaned into even more with the remake of the series, which I'm fascinated to see where it goes. I'm like, that's part of the thing that they've got me hooked. It's like, it is that game I remember with another layer on top of it that makes me want to play it. Like, if they would have just made this a pure remake in the style that they've done, we would be here for it. We would be playing this game exactly how we are, which we did through 90% of Final Fantasy VII Remake, because you don't find out the way that the twist happens until the very end of that game. And so, like, we played through that and loved every second of it, and then were, like, gobsmacked at the end of that game that they did something so different we weren't expecting. We're starting this game knowing that it's going to go a different place while still being nostalgic and familiar in all those ways. And it just gets you that much more, which is what's brilliant about it to me.
Well, it didn't really hit me last night when I saw it, but you get to the very end of the segment that you're where you're at now, and they're in the inn, and the two girls are in the room, and they're talking to each other, and Tifa says, "I." You know, all that's cool, but I don't remember Cloud being there.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa! Like, okay, so was it Zack?
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And there's I've played a little bit this morning, obviously, because I'm playing now. There's an interaction with Tifa right after that with Cloud that just makes it more confusing. And you're like, what is going on here? I don't understand. But get it all the best ways possible. Going back, though, to that kind of opening sequence of the game, the kind of first little bit that you play. So the first little bit you play in Midgar with Zack, and that's kind of interesting, but it's pretty brief and whatever. But the next part is this flashback of Nibelheim, which is, as I recall, again, it's been a long time since I played the original Final Fantasy VII, but I know it's part of the original Final Fantasy VII because there's the iconic moment with Sephiroth in the fire.
Yeah, I remember the tanks and the Genova and the whole thing.
But it was, in my memory, in the original game, just a quick flashback FMV that, like, doesn't take hardly any time. You get the creepy Sephiroth in the fire again, that iconic shot in the original game, which they recreate here. But instead of it being just a flashback, like, it's 2 hours of gameplay or whatever, you know, like, you get to go through it and actually play as Sephiroth and Cloud in dealing with, you know, returning to Nibelheim and going and finding the reactor there. And then Sephiroth kind of figuring out his origin story and how that kind of destroys him as a person, and then him destroying Nibelheim, and all the fallout from that and everything. That's the part of it where it's not telling a new story there. Again, that's the same story that we had before, but it's just so much more fleshed out than we got it before. And that original game is an incredibly fleshed out game, you know, like it's so deep. And this is just taking it and like why it's going to now be across three different games, plus the DLC that they're adding in and everything else. Like, that's the part of it that, like, to me is just like, oh, yes, this is what I'm here for. Like this is all familiar, but also like so distant in my past personally that it's both reminding me of this experience the first time I had it, but giving me this whole new experience of doing it again in a really, really cool way. And yeah, I just love it.
It's a whole new experience because I'm realizing that there was stuff back in the day that I didn't get.
Yes.
Like I'm sure I knew that, in fact, I know that I knew that he was created in a pod, but it didn't click that, you know, Hojo and R&D and all of that, and that Sephiroth knew all of this and didn't like it, and then he gets there and there's all his pods and he's pissed off, and it clicks in his brain that, like, yo, I'm a freak of nature here, like. All of that was in there in the original, but it wasn't.
Yeah, like, not like it that. Wasn't, the yeah. line of, I forget who it was, which one of the party members says it, but one of the party members is like, what is, you know, like Sephiroth, he seems like a pretty like upstanding dude. Stand here.
Up. It was Barrett.
Yeah.
Like Barrett was like, get to the bad part.
Right.
Like, give me something to hate this dude because he sounds fucking cool.
He sounds
dude,
pretty great. Yeah. And it's actually a really fascinating little story arc to get to play through this section with Sephiroth, who you know as like this terribly evil character in Final Fantasy, where you're like, he's not that bad, because that's the same experience you're having as like a character, as a player playing with him. It's like, oh, this is he's kind of cool here, you know, other than being like over the top goofy. Like, can we just say, like, this is part of what I appreciate from them, like trying to stay close to the original, but also where it like is weird in like 2024. Like, it's just a goofy game, right? Like, in so many ways. And when it came out in 1990, whatever, like, groundbreaking, and it felt so serious. Like, this was a serious RPG, even though it had its goofy elements to it at the time. But like, it was a serious game. And now some of the stuff, just like the character models of Sephiroth and Cloud compared to like all the other character models in the game, with these ridiculously giant swords and these absurd outfits and everything else, you're just like, okay, I'm just gonna have to suspend some disbelief here about like the super like ridiculousness of these people walking around in this world and everybody being like, oh yeah, cool, like dude with super long silver hair with this like 12-foot long sword hanging on his back, like, yeah, we'll do that, that's fine.
Two things. Somebody needs to do a meme video of Cloud and Sephiroth doing Can't Touch This and doing the MC Hammer dance with those pants. that needs to happen. Secondly,
they're so ridiculous.
When you get to the top of the mountain and people's like, you can't go that way, and they have to come back, and you go through the small crack, which you tried to do initially, and it was like, nope. But I'm watching you do that, and it does the Horizon, what's another game? God of War does that a lot, where you like, you go through the crack, and I'm like, okay, he ain't getting through that with that big sword. Like, that ain't happening. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
No way he's getting through that crack with that big sword.
Yes.
Like, that is a serious suspension of this belief, because, like, that sword's dragging the ground.
Yes. It's so absurd.
The other thing that is sort of mind-bending, and this is where the Devil May Cry part of it sort of comes in for me, is especially with the bosses, not so much with the smaller folks, but with the bosses, you're just hacking and hacking and hacking and hacking and hacking, and the health bar doesn't go anywhere, and I'm like, this is kind of ridiculous. Like, either the sword is sharp or it's not. Like, right. Like, what is going on? Like, I understand they're doing the whole Japanese style thing and jumping up in the air and slashing, and you get like 1/8 of the bar off after 5 minutes of just, you know, whacking someone on the head, and I'm going, this is ridiculous. Like, yeah, it's cool looking, but it's ridiculous.
Yes, it is. And like we talked about with Remake, and it's the same here, it's the same with Intermission, the combat is obviously massively different than the original. Just that's the thing, yep, that it deviates the most on, just in a really practical way. But it is really fun. It's so different, and it, part of me still like longs for like just a really traditional turn-based RPG version of this, and that it would be fun to have the like classic Final Fantasy VII thing. But the combat system is so well done. Like, they really, really did a great job with it, and it's just fun to play. And again, getting to play as Sephiroth, first of all, super fun. But getting to play as Sephiroth with this combat style, as opposed to just the turn-based combat style where you can play as Sephiroth and you just like hit a command and, oh, he's really dominant. That's cool. But to get to like use his abilities and see that in a different way because you're controlling it in real time in the more action style that is Final Fantasy VII Remake, is just super fun. And so kudos to them on that combat system that you and I both were very skeptical of going into Remake. I'm 100% sold on it.
And honestly, I still am, because I don't have the controller, man.
Sure.
It looks like a lot of button presses to get you press this button and then you hold this button and then you press this other button and when you started the game, you had the option, and it's in the options, you can do it anytime. You had the option to switch it to classic mode, and I actually had the thought of, I wonder what that would look like.
It just is, because it's the same mode that was in Remake, in my understanding at least, is that it fights for you. Like, it just does it for you. Then you just set whatever, like, he builds up his ATB, you could set what ability to use
and that kind of stuff.
But it still all happens in real time. You just have less button mashing to do.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but the button mashing I find kind of fun. And so, and I play it like kind of because you could play it even more button mashy, because there's like hot buttons for all of the different like skills. So when you fill up your bar, instead of going to the menu to execute those, you can actually do it just via like L1 and then one of the face buttons, you know, and so you can do it without ever having to slow down combat. But I actually really like the slowing down combat side of it, because it does feel a little more turn-based, you know, and so you kind of get the best of both worlds there for me. And so I'm always probably going to play it with that like, okay, now I've filled up my bar, let me hit R2 or X, which are the buttons that bring up, you know, those abilities, and like stop and think for a little bit and be a little bit strategic about what I want to do here. Or sometimes I'm just like, this is what I want to do, and I just hit the button real fast and it just happens. And you're like, that's cool too. But like the fact that you kind of have this pacing that you get to choose how you want that pacing to play out is a nice feature.
Let's just specify, he says that you get to go through the menus, but like he's going through the menus like a speed freak that's been out for 36 hours and doesn't know where he's at or what he's doing. You click it like 3 or 4, and I'm like, wait, what are you just doing? What? Like, I have to like stop the video and run it back and do it slow-mo. Like, what is this, man?
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I guess that is for the we have no patience generation that we're in these days. Like, they had to know, like, we have to do it this way or people won't play it. Because I needed to be slower.
Like, sure.
That's something that if I were ever going to play it, it would have to be slower.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a lot going on there. And like I said, it's cool looking. It's just sort of ridiculous.
It is over the top. Two quick things, at least, potential complaints here. One, you brought up, I just want to mention, the squeezing through the crevice thing as a gameplay mechanic, which is a really, you know, like, old trope at this point of like giving you excuse to load the next area. We see it all the time. God of War, you mentioned God of War uses it constantly, but lots of games use it. This is the PlayStation 5. This is a game that was developed for the PlayStation 5 that's not out on the PlayStation 4. Why are we using that mechanic? It's not an interesting gameplay mechanic. It doesn't add anything to your gameplay experience of like, oh, here's a tight little space that we have to crawl through slowly. If you don't need it to load the areas beyond where you're at right now, what are we doing it for? Maybe they still do. Maybe that's why it's there, is because they're still doing that. But they say they're not anymore because of the solid state drive and all that stuff. So that's one. Two, a little bit more, I don't know. Interesting, obviously, is something that seems like they're addressing. It is a, let me caveat, beautiful game. Just gorgeous.
Yes.
Like, fantastic looking. But that was
where I was going next.
I have two complaints. One is that there's something about the character models that just seem off to me. And I'm not sure what it is. And there's a story in the show notes that there's a tweak that they're going to put out in an update with something with performance mode, because we are playing in performance mode to get the higher frame rate. And I put it in graphics mode for a little bit and it felt so laggy. I was like, I can't play this. Like, this is awful. So there's no option there. It's performance mode through and through. But apparently there's some issue in performance mode with some of the shading and maybe some of the textures and this kind of stuff that they're going to fix. And that's fine, but it's not quite as polished as I would have hoped in that vein, but it's still gorgeous. I mean, it still looks amazing. There's just noticeable points where I'm like, that could look like Sephiroth in particular. To me, there's just something about like his character model with the face and the hair and stuff that just, like, I'm like, that doesn't look as good as I think it should.
Well, and the thing that gets me is like the open areas of the village, and like, it's pretty. But it's PlayStation 4 pretty.
Yes.
Like, it's not... As a guy that has been playing Cyberpunk for the last month of his life, I know what is out there, and I know what stuff is capable of, and this is not... It's not... Like, it's pretty. It's a definite upgrade, but it's not like... Wow.
Yes. And on that, it is more wow than it is in that beginning sequence, because the very beginning in Midgar looks better. And then where we're at now in Calm, I just walked out of the inn into like the big area of Calm, and it's very pretty. Like, it just looks so much better. But Nibelheim in particular, that whole sequence with Nibelheim and going into the mountain and stuff, it's just not a very aesthetically pretty area. Like, it's just craggy and rocky and whatever, and it just doesn't, like, there was one place where I stood and looked for a while that you probably noticed, of like looking out over the ocean, it was just it just isn't that awe-inspiring. And then in Calm, there's another point, I think I did this morning, so you'll see it when you catch up, that you go up on the roof of the inn, and I just like did this panoramic sweep. I'm like, there it is, that's really pretty. But this is, we had this complaint about going all the way back to Red Dead Redemption 2. Did this, like, the opening area of that game just was ugly. God of War did this with just not, like, very snowy. You couldn't see much of the world, that kind of stuff. And I get, like, maybe what their thought is like, we don't want to give you the pretty stuff right at the beginning. We want to kind of have a payoff here in a little bit. But I think that's dumb. I want a really pretty area to start the game. Like, I want you to blow my socks off at the very beginning. And then if we go to Nibelheim and it's not as pretty, like, fine, whatever. But like, I just really want to be in awe. And again, Midgar at the very beginning is prettier. But Nibelheim just wasn't a very impressive looking area. It just, like, aesthetically wasn't that interesting. And it just felt like, a little bit, it felt like playing a PlayStation 4 game. You're spot on there. And that's not bad, but it just was kind of disappointing.
Look, Horizon on the PC, the whole of Horizon on the PC is better looking than what that section
Oh, yeah.
He is.
Of course. And that's true of the Horizon on PlayStation 5, too, which was a PlayStation 4 game. Like, it was ported to the PlayStation 5. It still looks better than this game did at that moment that was developed solely for the PlayStation 5.
Okay, so here would... I'm channeling a developer in my head. If we had a developer here and we asked them what the deal was, they would say, oh, it's about time, or it's about money, or it's about manpower, resources, what, like, we were in a crunch, we were like, what? There's all kinds of reasons why, but if you are releasing a game that is, let's face it, built a lot on the visuals and built a lot on this environment. Like, that's not a place you can skimp.
Yeah.
You know what I'm like? That, we're in this for the story.
Yes.
Okay, this is a story-driven thing, but part of what makes the story a whole lot like Cyberpunk and Night City, a whole lot of what makes the story is what you see, yeah. Right? And especially in 2024, you look at something like that and you're like, come on, guys, you can do better than this, because I got like four examples in my office on my PC
right.
that are better than this.
And again, like, what I am looking at on my screen right now is better than what that looked like. But that's such a big part of the game early on. Like, why can't you make that part look this good too? Like, it just... I don't know. It's just an aesthetic thing. It's a small thing. We are going to be playing this game for quite a while, and you're going to hear a lot about it. And it's going to be prettier, and it's going to get more impressive and all those things. But it was worth mentioning there as a small but worthy thing to point out.
You were talking last week about people reviewing it and what they thought and all of that. And you said something to the effect of some dude put 100 hours in it. And after 100 hours, he felt real good about the whole thing and just really enjoyed it. I'm watching this thing last night thinking, I can't imagine that there's 100 hours here. because it is sort of on rails, and they're trying to tell a story. It's not like Cyberpunk where you're running around the city doing various things. Like, I've gone 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 hours without touching any part of the main story, just running around doing side missions and making money and doing, like, arguably that is my favorite part of Cyberpunk. Like, the story's great, but just running around seeing all the different things and all the different ways, like, to me, that's the part that I'm enjoying right now. But Final Fantasy Rebirth does not have that. Like, it's very much on rail. It doesn't have it yet.
There you go. That's the thing.
Yeah.
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 That's the caveat, is we're still just in the early portion of it, which, to be clear, Final Fantasy Remake never really had it. Final Fantasy Remake 7 Remake was basically on rails all the way through, yeah. Which has been kind of the theme for Final Fantasy games in recent history, more or less. And so it doesn't deviate from recent Final Fantasy games. But this one we know is going to be more open world, because we already have people talk about how you get into the open world. We just haven't got into the open world. I'm interested to see how much of it, when we get into the open world side of it, is really kind of full fleshed out open world. I'm not here for an open world game per se. Like, it to me, is it, you know, Cyberpunk or something like that, where the game Cyberpunk is you inhabiting Night City. Like, at the end of the day, yeah, like, that is what that game is built on. There's a story that goes along with that. Final Fantasy VII is you inhabiting these characters, right? Like, it is a character-driven narrative as opposed to an environmentally-driven narrative, which Cyberpunk is much more that way.
It's a storybook. Like, it's an interactive storybook.
Yes.
with defined characters and like, I'm not saying V is not defined, but
right, but V is less defined than Cloud.
Yeah.
Cloud looks a certain way. V can be male or female and can look a million different ways, but like it's a different way of telling a story. It's a different way of getting into a narrative experience, and like, one's not better than the other, but they're going to differ in that execution for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, it's hard for me to believe there's 100 hours here, but at the same time, if there's even 50 hours, we're not playing anything else until Christmas, which I hate. Because Spider-Man is just sitting there. I know you want to be playing Cyberpunk as well, and
this has my full attention at this point.
Yeah, I mean, even 50 hours, I'm like, crap, we're gonna be here a while.
Yes.
So I'm excited. I'm sort of afraid. Like, every time I turn on the video, I'm like, is this gonna be the time that it goes off the rails and I go, they just blew it. But one thing I will say about Reverb before we move on is that I don't know how to put it other than, despite everything we just said, it's snazzy. Snazzy is the only word that I can think of. Like, the menus are slick and like, it's a really nice, snazzy presentation.
Yes, this is true.
And yeah,
it is, while it doesn't feel quite as polished graphically as other games, like, everything else about it is going to be solid and tight and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
All that said, we do got a couple of show notes to talk about. Like I said, I really want to get this Warner Brothers discussion, because it just blew my mind when I read it. I had to reread this article a couple of times. So again, go by gamingoncensored.com if you want to see this as well. So this comes from JB Perrett. I don't know exactly how you say his name. He is the gaming boss at Warner Brothers Discovery, is how he is described in this story. He was speaking at a Morgan Stanley event. And so just keep in mind kind of what the audience here is, what we're thinking through, which is not talking to gamers, very obviously. But he said this, quote, "We're doubling down on games as an area where we think there's a lot more growth opportunity that we can tap into with the IP that we have and some of the capabilities that we have on the studio, where we're uniquely positioned both as a publisher and a developer of games." That, so far, seems to make a lot of sense. You're WB. You've got a lot of stuff that you have available to you. We've seen a lot of this stuff even just recently, of course, having Harry Potter. Big deal. Successful game. Having access to DC World. Big deal. Again, not always going to be a successful game. And those are the two games that get brought up here as saying, okay, we had a game like Hogwarts, and if that could be what we do, then we'd be great. But then he said that this is a, quote, "volatile market," pointing out that Suicide Squad did not do that well. And to me, my takeaway was, yes, you are correct, because Hogwarts was a game that was designed as a single-player, deep experience in a world that we love, and Suicide Squad was a game that was designed as kind of this weird, trying-to-be-live-service, but not quite live-service thing, that didn't have a direction, didn't have a point to it. What they took from that was that we are going to do more of Suicide Squad and not more of Harry Potter. So here's what the quote is. This is from him. Quote, "Rather than just launching a one-and-done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, a Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter that is a live service where people can live and work and build and play in a world on an ongoing basis?"
You idiot!
Why would you do that? Because you're using Hogwarts as the example of the success, and then you go, what if we took the successful one and did the things to it that weren't successful in the other one and made that our game? Like, it just, like, boggles my mind.
first There's so much to unpack here. We have like 10 minutes because you got to be in a meeting and we don't have time for this. But like, I'm just going to go. And if you have to cut me off, then do it. Because here I go. Like, first of all, Hogwarts was successful. But it wasn't the kind of successful that we were hoping it would be. Like, it sold a lot of units, but it wasn't, like, an epically great game. Like, it kept us interested.
Right.
But you had the line when we're playing it, I'm going to play this one time, and I'm never going to play it again.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was successful. Yeah, it sold a lot of units, which is their goal. I understand that. But it wasn't like an all-time great, like, ooh, this is the bar kind of a game, right? So you take that and you try and throw some live service in there. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? How about doing another Harry Potter game and trying to do better than you did last time?
That's the takeaway, right? That like this idea that the AAA console games are quote volatile. When you just made one that was massively successful, even though it as a game is really flawed, what that should tell you is that make even better Harry Potter games and more people are going to buy it, not turn it into a live service where okay, nobody...
So,
it just...
All right. I'm going to get us in some serious trouble here. and we're probably going to have some disagreement. But I live in a world... I have people... I'm just going to be real honest. I have people that come to my house and take care of me every day. I have two people that one's here during the week. Chris is in the living room right now listening to us be idiots. And then I have a nice lady on the weekends that comes and hangs out. And I have a job posting up all of the time. All the time. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And because we always need more help. And in the last month, 2 months, I have sent the job application out to 30 people. I have not heard a word from a soul back. Like, yeah, I'm getting the paperwork done, whatever. I say all of this to say is what I get from that quote is we could really put in the work for another Harry Potter and we could try and do better, but it's really volatile and it's a crapshoot. And if we spend a bunch of money and a bunch of time, then it flops. Then it's not worth our time. So we'll just try and do a live service game because it's easier and we can kind of slap together. And if we make some money, fine. If not, fine. I say all of that to say it sort of sounds like what I'm feeling right now, which is in general in society, a whole lot of people don't want to work for what they get. And I'm not saying that's every developer on every team. What I'm saying is it's a very corporate way of thinking in that, okay, what's the least that we can do to make the most money? Right?
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. And so when I have this job post out and I'm trying to get people to pay attention, they're filling it out thinking, okay, what's the least that I have to do that I can make the most money? And that's just where the world is now, and I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously an element of that here of what, again, this is a business guy talking to the business world, not talking to gamers. And again, it just like, to me, make games that gamers like and gamers are going to buy and play your games like that. That like it's just such a simple thing to me. But obviously, that's not the worldview that these people are looking through. And what they're looking through is, again, how can we monetize this as far into the future as possible? Even if it's, you know, because he talks about that they're going to look more at mobile games and free to play and that kind of stuff as where they're going to put their efforts into as opposed to traditional AAA titles because that's where they think people are going to spend more money overall. And maybe so. Again, like, if you're trying to be like make Fortnite or whatever, get something where people are going to spend a ton of money into it. Like that happens. Like there is that world of gaming, but there is a very limited space for that to happen. And it just, is it something that's going to build brand loyalty that's going to get people coming back to your games? Because you can't make Suicide Squad again, right? Like you screwed that up. Like it's a potentially great franchise that just didn't happen. Like it just is now just sitting there and you can't come back from that. And you spent a lot of money on that. Like, I don't know what the budgets for Harry Potter versus Suicide Squad were. And again, we're getting into a lot of different realms with different developers involved here and all kinds of stuff like that. It gets very, very complicated. So I'm just acknowledging that on the front end. We are overly simplifying this. But to oversimplify it for a little bit for the sake of the conversation here, I'm going to guess they had similar budgets. They're both AAA titles. They're just AAA titles in different ways. And they're them saying the one that sold 22 million copies is the one that is not as successful because it's not ongoing. We're going to try to do more of the one that just totally flopped because it has the potential to be ongoing, even though when we did it, we failed at it. Mostly, I won't say completely failed, but mostly failed. It definitely was underwhelming. It definitely did not come into expectations, and that's why they're talking about it as volatile. But it's not a traditional AAA game that they're comparing it to, and it just boggles my mind. Just like, that was their takeaway from this situation when they had one hugely successful game and one game that was a flop, and they go, we're gonna try to shift our business model more like the game that was more of a flop.
I mean, okay, I just have to address one other thing, and you play a lot on mobile, so you can push back on this, but I am so tired of the freemium model.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of, like, I was watching YouTube yesterday because, believe it or not, I'm using YouTube a lot for research for this show, and I haven't had the ad-free YouTube for a while. I stopped paying for that because I was trying to cut costs, whatever. And, like, there was a commercial every 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's so brutal.
And the theory is like, you're getting it for free, so, like, we're going to get you what? But I'm clicking these videos going, this is insane. Like, I don't have time for this. I just need to get the content or the information that I'm looking for, and then I got to go do something else. I'm so tired of, like, here, we'll give you this and it's free, but we're going to bombard you with ads and steal your info. Like, I'm not with that. And when I say steal your info, I mean just everybody and their dog is data mining. Google's data mining. The platform that we're on right now is data mining. Sure. Like, this podcast is probably going to CIA or FBI or something. All I got to do is say the wrong word. We got people at our door. Like,
right.
Everybody is that. I get it. And I'm getting tired. Like, I'm getting to the point where it's like, I'll give you money. Here's my money. Leave me alone.
Yeah. For sure. And maybe we're outside of the target audience for some of this stuff because we're not live service game people. We're not as heavy mobile game people or whatever it is. And like, okay. But like, I think we're pretty representative of what people actually enjoy. That's the part that's like, why are we not doing more of that? So. Anyway, two more really quick corporate kind of speak thing because we're on this. And so I'm going to skip over to these really quick because this one irritated me too. So as mentioned, more layoffs this past week in the gaming industry coming from two big companies, EA and Sony. And so lots of really packed full studios and developers hit by these layoffs, including like Naughty Dog and Insomniac and stuff like that, which is a little wild, but both in the like name of streamlining. But I just want to like quickly, and this isn't like, I want to be very clear here, like the layoffs and everything else suck. End of story. Like, it doesn't matter like what company it is, or how you feel about these companies or whatever, because I'm about to say something that's going to make it seem like I support one of these companies more than the other. And in some ways I do, at least in their way that they're communicating this, but the communication is a very small thing on the actual issue of people losing their jobs, which just sucks. But the way these two companies communicated this, very, very different approaches. So EA first, again, just talking about corporate speak with Warner Brothers there, it goes very much into this. The headline here, this is what they shared. This is an update from our business, on our business from CEO Andrew Wilson. Continuing to evolve our business and teams, which is, you know, not a, hey, we're laying off a whole bunch of people. And you can go through and read this again, it's posted at the show notes. It is like so fluff, right? Like, as we are entertaining, inspiring, and connecting more people with more content and deeper experiences than ever before. As a company full of creators and storytellers, we believe in the value of teams innovating together and continuing to learn to adopt. This is now into third paragraph of this, the last sentence of the third paragraph is, quote, lastly, we are streamlining our company operations to deliver deeper, more connected experiences for fans everywhere that build community, shape culture, and grow fandom. That is the announcement of the layoffs. And then it goes on to say, we expect these decisions to impact approximately 5% of our workforce. They still haven't said we are laying off people. Like, it is so corporate speak that just, so gross.
Look, can we just we don't have time for this. But I really hate whether it's Netflix or Hulu or HBO or Amazon. Amazon did it the other day because they've added an ad-free tier to their Prime Video, which I'm paying for because I'm like, it's $3. Who cares? But that was their thing. We're doing this to give you better content and keep innovating and all. That's what everybody always says. And no, you're not. You're doing it to make more money and to deal with some of the costs that you have that are going up. Like you don't make. Right. This like you're trying to make it better for me. I'm tired of that.
Yes.
Just say we need more money.
Yeah. Like, just say, you know, this sucks and it's hard and where we at. So the Sony, this comes from Jim Ryan, president and CEO of Sony Interactive. The headline on what was shared from Sony is difficult news about our workforce. And so at least it's addressing straight up what's happening here. And it starts with the PlayStation community means everything to us. So I felt it was important to update you on a difficult day at our company. We have made the extremely hard decision to announce our plan to commence a reduction of our overall headcount globally by about 8%, which is nuts, or about 900 people. That sucks. And it goes on. Yeah. These are incredibly talented people who have been part of our success, and we are grateful for their contributions. It talks about how the industry has changed and that kind of stuff. Not that there's not corporate speak to it. It absolutely is still corporate speak to that. But thank you for saying this is a difficult decision. It affects people and it sucks. And here's what it is. Like, that's the thing. Again, never in the press release from EA does it say we're laying off people. It says we expect these decisions to impact approximately 5% of our workforce. The decision is streamlining our company operations. Like, those are the words that they use of laying people off. Like, it just is so impersonal. Like, it's just like, if you value those people, say, we know this sucks and you as a person are being affected, not we are streamlining our workforce, because that is dehumanizing in every way. So I got to go because I got a meeting to go to, but now I'm all fired up. And it is what it is.
So, like he said, he got somewhere to be. So, if you would like to join us on the web, we are at gaminguncensored.com. You can join us there. We are on Facebook. We've got the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
if you would like to be a patron, we will take your money. We have no idea what's coming up as far as content is going, but we're trying. So stay with us. Thank you to everybody that has stayed with us, even though we take vacations and disappear. And thanks to all of that. Other than that, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. And for one more week, we are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.